I'm very happy now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Tomás Inos. He is owner of Milagro Herbs and Milagro School of Herbal Medicine, and an 8-month course in herbal medicine will begin this April, taught by Tomás and his colleagues. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte.
So let's talk about the study of herbal medicine. How did you learn this practice?
Primarily, my big introduction was with the famed herbalist Michael Moore, who's written several books on medicinal plants of the Southwest and Southwest Desert. And he was a resident of Taos in Santa Fe for a number of years, and then moved down into the lower desert, Sonoran Desert in Arizona. And I studied with him in Silver City, New Mexico. And he was a fabulous teacher and storyteller and a knowledgeable person about everything herbal.
So when you study and when you teach, how much of it is classroom and how much of it is growing your herbs, going out in the landscape and harvesting them, learning about them in real life, so to speak?
I would say that in our course, the 8-month course, it's about 40% classroom and 60% hands-on, let's say. We cover a little bit as far as growing and cultivation, but a lot of the hands-on part has to do with the application of once a person knows what a plant is used for, then how do you formulate something valuable from it and how do you apply it in the realm of humans or animals for their benefit. And so that's a big part of the herbal tradition, is learning the application. And so we learn the pharmacy, how to prepare things, and then how to use them.
What are the typical ways that an herb turns into an herbicide?
Well, the most simple form would be in a tea, would be simply taking leaves of a plant or a combination of plants and making an infusion or steeping a tea. Or in the case of roots and barks that are harder, we boil them and render down the substances in there. So that's the simplest form. From there, we go teach how to prepare oils and extracts, creams and lotions, shampoos, a multitude of remedies from the different plants.
Would you call shampoo a remedy?
Oh, sure.
What do you mean?
In generally, we want to maintain good scalp health so we don't have dry scalp, for example, in this climate or from hard water. And we want our hair to grow healthy and to look good. And it's an indication of a person's health, actually. If you look at their hair, skin, and nails, it tells you a lot about what's going on inside. So a good shampoo is very valuable.
What are some of the things that you would put in those products for your scalp or for your skin, especially in this climate?
The premier plant for the hair is Yerba de la Negrita, which is the scarlet globe mallow, which grows all over Santa Fe.
Which grows like a weed in my driveway.
Right, and it's a beautiful orange flower in July and August, and that's been used for centuries here. It's related to marshmallow and also related to okra. And as you know, it creates this mucilage when you cook it. And so the same thing applies with the scarlet globe mallow or yerba la negrita. It soothes with the mucilaginous quality. So it soothes the scalp and allows the hair follicle to grow out healthier. And it's just been documented for centuries. And then probably second after that is the yucca plant. The root of the yucca has what we call saponins or soapy substances in the root, and that was used and still used traditionally as a soapy shampoo base. And it's fantastic, very soft on the hair, non-toxic, very simple, and a person can make their own just with the plants in their house.
One of the things that's, I think, so interesting about herbal medicine and becoming even an amateur herbalist, and if people go through your course, they're more than an amateur herbalist, but for those of us who are like cutting the yerba de la negrita out of the driveway and making a hair thing from it, which I've done in the past, there's a kind of like do-it-yourself non-reliance on industrial production and industrial medicine and those kinds of things that you have the freedom to explore in herbal medicine.
Right, and the that's where we all came from. That's all, the tradition from all over the world. And no matter where you look, even our European traditions come from the Greeks and from Eastern Mediterranean areas, North Africa, in the case of the Spanish. And so it's a valuable knowledge, and it also connects us to the land so we can see the plants around us and recognize their value, and we appreciate them more, and we don't destroy them. Or there are a multitude of reasons and benefits that come out of that. And then also, of course, you have your, what we call our medicine chest, is right outside our door, if we know
exactly
how to use the plants the right way.
What are some of the medicines and some of the herbal medicines that you find yourself using with people and with yourself at this time of year? Mm-hmm. We've had snow falling, it gets cold, the temperature varies widely, and I don't know about anybody else, but I'm very vulnerable to these little respiratory infections, and they just keep coming back.
Right, that's the... We study the body and how our bodies are linked to the earth. So in the fall season, the organ system in our, the organs in our body are the lungs that are the most active, and the ones that we need to protect. So of course, our go-to remedy in the fall is Osha root. Everybody that is from here knows that root is a real benefit. It's an antibiotic, antiviral plant, so it protects against infection. And or if it, an infection sets in, then it helps clear it out. So it's warming, moving, and it purifies. It has this kind of quality that, where the flavor is aromatic, so when you ingest it and then you breathe out, it clears the breath and cleans out the lungs. So Osha is really number one, and what we should be keeping around with us all the time.
Now, do you have to boil that, or do you make a tea out of it, or how do you use it?
It's the root of the Osha, and so we, for roots, we boil them. And it's used in so many different ways, but the people chew on the root just as it is and keep it in their pocket and chew on it. I carry around a little piece in my pocket, and if I feel something in my throat, I just chew on that and it clears it right out. And it's really a fabulous remedy and been tested for its antibiotic properties, and it really does work. And so we also infuse it in honey or make it an extract or a syrup or any number of things from that plant.
We're talking to herbalist Tomas Enos. Now, a lot of the way that you approach herbal medicine seems to be really maintaining health and preventing illness. At the same time, you've got people surely who come to you and say, you know, I've got cancer, diabetes, heart disease, all kinds of things. How can I use herbal medicine to support the other treatments that I'm getting?
That's correct. We see so many different types of illnesses or conditions, and so we make an evaluation based on our knowledge, and depending on each individual's health condition, we either make recommendations that they can do with their diet and lifestyle, and then some herbal remedies. And in some cases, people need to continue with pharmaceutical medication, or they need surgery, and that would be an assessment that they would make with their doctor. So we're careful about that, and there are a multitude of possibilities and cases, of course, depending on the individual. But we look at it as in health care. So health, try to maintain health before a person gets sick or at too far out of balance, let's say, and then care goes with the herbal or natural tradition of caring for somebody so that they get better. And that's been proven, of course. It's just part of our tradition as well, and that our grandmas and our mothers gave us and that were so valuable that made us feel better.
It's really very much of a kind of whole life approach that you take.
Very much so, yeah. So we ask a lot of questions about a person's diet, like what they're eating or how they're eating or what their lifestyle is like, how much stress they're under, and how they're living, and if, are they getting any exercise, and what are they doing. And in many, many cases, it's a matter of bringing a person into balance. So generally, in the most general sense, we're either looking at adding something and also decreasing something. So doing having a little less stress and a little more relaxation, for example. So you might have do something, meditation, take a walk, and then drink a simple tea like chamomile. So it's bringing a person more into balance.
And there are things that seem so very simple that we should all really have thought of ourselves.
Right. And things we can do at very low cost and just to maintain health. And looking at we're in control of our lifestyle and we can do the things ourselves. In many cases, it doesn't take a lot. It's more a case of changing our attitude or our habits, which are hard to change sometimes.
It's very hard to change, and it's hard to change in a world where, for example, there's a lot of fast food, there's a lot of stress, some of us have to have multiple jobs, whatever the case is, and a lot of that takes a toll on digestion.
That's one of the main complaints. Now, I would say either number one or number two, people complain about their digestion. And, of course, with digestion, you have the foods, but you also have the nervousness, and you also have emotional stress or a whole host of things that are certain combinations of things. And the quality of food being what it is now, you have to be really careful about what quality of food people eat. So a lot of people are wheat intolerant or gluten intolerant, and they need to watch their diet and make some changes there. But luckily we have choices, and the information's out there. And in Santa Fe, we've got such a great amount of natural and whole foods and information available that it's very helpful.
Do you have a hypothesis about why so many people are gluten intolerant, whereas when you and I were kids, that was not the case?
Well, there's some thinking that the actual wheat and the plants that are grown with are not the original seeds and the original plants, and they're mass-produced, and they may be sprayed with herbicides, pesticides as well, and then there have also been studies done on when grain is stored in silos, there can be funguses or molds while it's sitting there. Yeah, you know, so much of our food is mass-produced. And then there are also different combinations or our guts. We're eating so many different kinds of foods now that we don't eat just a strict traditional diet. We're eating foods from all over the place and all over the world, and our stomachs are perhaps a little confused or irritated. It's really inflammation of the gut, and that can be caused from any number of things. So when we make an assessment, we try to identify what that is.
It's interesting. Are you advocating that people not eat food from all over the world?
No, not at all. I do myself.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because, and I mean, so many of us are transplanted from elsewhere in the first place, and historically, virtually all of us are transplanted.
Sure, and that's kind of the fun of it. If your body can handle it to go out and have a nice Indian, East Indian food meal or Chinese food or any number of things. But in general, being careful about food combinations, and also our study has to do with circadian rhythms, like when to eat certain foods.
And what would be an example of that?
Well, one of the primary complaints as well is sleeplessness, inability to sleep or waking up in the middle of the night. And people can avoid that in many cases by not eating a sweet after dinner. Don't eat dessert after dinner. And don't drink too much red wine too late in the evening. You can drink other things, alcohol-related, like tequila or mezcal, which fits the circadian rhythm of nighttime. And so certain foods are best not to be eaten late in the day because the liver becomes activated between 1 and 3 a.m. And if a person's waking up between 1 and 3 a.m., which is the most common time to be waking up, it can be related to the liver working hard to try to digest sugar.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting, and just modifying the diet. So drink red wine in the afternoon like we did in the old country, Italy and Spain, and take a siesta, and then eat your red meat at lunch, your bigger meal, and then eat lighter in the evening and avoid the sugar at night.
And then when you do that, you find that people are more likely to sleep through the night?
Right. And then with the herbal therapies, we can give a person herbs to calm down their nervous system, and then help them break the pattern of sleeplessness, because a lot of times it becomes such an ingrained pattern that the body's used to it and just does it automatically. So if a person can sleep through the night 2, 3, 4, 5 times in a row, then their body says, I like this, sleeping
right.
all night long. This is great. I feel so much better in the morning. And so that's kind of the combination of things.
The formation of new habits, the breaking of old habits, is such an interesting thing to observe in oneself. It's easy to form a... somehow it seems easier to form a bad habit. I don't know why that is. But you can form them quite quickly, and then making new ones is a challenge.
Well, the bad habits feel good, don't they? Particularly when we're in our 20s and, we can do anything and we just wake up feeling great, you know. But once we start getting up into the 40s, 50s, and 60s, it's, okay, well, something's off here, and we need to make the changes. So for longevity's purposes and health in the long run, it's best to make some changes. And luckily, we have some good models like our elders. My grandparents and my parents lived a healthy life, and they just made the right changes. And so luckily, that's the case. You don't want to go too long with making bad choices later in life, because it wears a person down.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if I remember correctly, you had kind of a wild period yourself that
right.
propelled you on this path.
Yeah, I talk about that a lot at parties. Everybody's had usually had a wild time in their 20s, and why not? I was, part of the late 60s, early 70s, so all that fun stuff we had, Summer of Love and all that great music and all the things that went with that. And so that was good. But I changed in my late 20s and early 30s because I got very sick and had to make the change whether I wanted to or not. So it's been a positive thing in the long run.
What did you get?
I had a blood disorder, yeah, and my blood wasn't coagulating. My platelets weren't working properly, and so I had weak blood, and if I would have been cut or bruised, I could have bled to death from. So that was from overconsumption of
things,
unhealthy fun stuff.
So,
and so
what did you do?
I got it together and started eating really healthy and moved to the mountains and hiked a lot and just really took care of myself.
And your blood started coagulating again?
Everything was great, yeah. Even my doctor, they put me on medication for a while, and then I told my doctor, I said, you know what, I'm ready to move to the mountains and start grinding my own grain and cooking my own food. He said, that's the best thing you could do for your health. So I did, and I got totally healthy, and I haven't had that condition since.
Now, do you tend, for example, not to get sick in the winter?
Oh, no. Yeah, I mean, I watch it. I watch when I'm in a big crowd, for example, or if someone's sick, I wash my hands, and I'm careful about guarding my health and trying to keep the stress level down and rest a lot. Yeah,
yeah.
Sure. Well, I try to avoid it, and I do pretty well at it, but you never know.
Now, you also have you have a kitty who's very old and very healthy, and you feed your cat herbs.
Right. Yeah. Animals respond really well to it. You have to be careful because it doesn't necessarily correspond directly over from human to cat or dog. What you give them, sometimes they don't react the same. But when my cat gets a little pissy or angry, I give him a little dandelion root flower essence, and really he likes it. And he also gets regular acupuncture treatments for his arthritis, and he loves that. And he eats beneficial enzymes in his food, like probiotics.
That's actually something else I wanted to ask you about. So many of us have taken antibiotics over the course of our lives. Sometimes they're unnecessarily prescribed. Sometimes they save our lives, whatever it is. But they definitely damage the beneficial bacteria that are in our digestive tracts. And there is this whole attempt to try to rebuild it. And it's difficult because sometimes you kill all of them and that strain becomes extinct. How do you replenish that? Is it possible?
In most cases, yes. If a person eats, beneficial enzymes or things like yogurt or papaya and takes care of their health and tries to restore health, but sometimes it takes a while to get there. The antibiotics are beneficial and good for us if we have a severe infection, but a lot of times antibiotics are just taken for very lightweight, superficial things like maybe a cold or ear infection where natural remedies might work if it's not too severe. And so it's a matter of restoring health, eating healthy things, and eating fermented foods, for example, like kimchi or sauerkraut or all the things that were kind of homemade. So the home cooking is really a crucial part of it, is things that are made at home and from scratch. Because if you look at a package or a can or a jar of a pre-prepared food, there are preservatives in there, and what the preservatives do is keep the product fresh for a longer period of time. So that's good for that product that's in the store, but you're also eating thickeners and preservatives to go along with your heated up pasta or lasagna out of the frozen food section. It's got preservatives in it, and that doesn't benefit our intestinal flora. If you make lasagna from scratch, you got it all right there, vitamin B12. And
it's so much better.
It is, yeah. Yeah, if you would try my lasagna, you'd say so.
We're talking to Tomas Enos of Milagro Herbs and Milagro School of Herbal Medicine. So the 8-month course in herbal medicine begins this April. Tell us about it and how people can find out more information.
They can go online to milagroschoolofherbalmedicine.com or call us at 820-6321, and we can answer their questions. Basically, it's an 8-month course, 250 hours of training that includes a big component of studying the local plants of our region and how to apply them and make their own medicine. So at the other end in November, when they graduate with their certificate, the students have a great knowledge of how to do cook with the seasons and how to prepare herbal remedies with the seasons and how to make different remedies for themselves and their family, their coworkers, and their immediate sphere of influence. And they start applying it, and right away people start, once it's your friends and family know that you've been studying herbs, they say, well, what about this? And next thing you know, they're, helping people along. So it's a very practical, hands-on program that the students come out with a wide range of knowledge. It's the best information to get started is a very general program, because we study botany, we study therapeutics, pharmacy, we study identification of the plants and how to apply them. So we give them a good base to start with.
Tomas Enos is the owner of Milagro Herbs and Milagro's Herbal... Milagro School of Herbal Medicine, and your shop is located on Paseo de Peralta.
Right, downtown, next to Santa Fe Properties and two doors from Kakawa Chocolate House, which most people know for this time of year.
Yeah.
For its great chocolate.
Very yummy chocolate indeed.
Yeah.
Well, Tomas, great to have you back on the show.
Thanks a lot, Mary Charlotte. Really appreciate it.